Hey, this is John Mark Lapham, and you're listening to a mini episode of One Hit Wondering. Our job here is to take songs that turn bands into what is commonly referred to as one hit wonders and use them as a springboard to explore the bigger picture. We endeavor to look both at the big hits everyone knows and the little gems that time has forgotten. Today's show is all about the latter. Last week I interviewed music journalist Martin Aston, and during our chat we randomly started talking about the song Kites, originally recorded by Simon Dupree and the Big Sound in 1967. A mutual friend of ours had just turned me onto it, and I started to feel mildly obsessed with it. It turns out Martin was a big fan too, so we decided to expand on it and turn it into a bonus episode. So coming up shortly, just for you, is a special edition of One Hit Wondering. But first, let me ask you something. Are you alarmed by all the plastic that's ending up in our landfills and on our streets? With the growing popularity of people using Keurig K-Cups for their coffee every day, this problem is only growing worse. In 2013, K-Cup producer Green Mountain produced 8.3 billion K-Cups, enough to wrap around the equator 10.5 times. It's time to ditch the plastic, folks. iGreenPod is a plant-based, biodegradable K-Cup that fits the Keurig coffee maker. The owner of iGreenPod, Sean Altman, was acutely aware of this problem that these plastic cups pose for the environment. iGreenPods are biodegradable pods made of plant material that will decompose in about 3 months in home compost. Not only are they biodegradable, but iGreenPod selects only the best artisan roasted coffee. If you're looking for a non-plastic K-Cup with high-quality coffee, iGreenPod has it. Join them in closing the loop back to nature by using earth-friendly coffee pods. Check out their website at iGreenPod.com. That's iGreenPod.com.
What do you want? Well, my time is very, very expensive.
That's what they all say in the beginning.
Do they? And then they just come around and do it for anything.
They give it to me for free.
Give it to you for free. There must be a song in there somewhere.
This song, Kites, I only have known this song for, I'd say, about 10 days. A friend of ours turned me on to it. It instantly took hold of me, and I had to start looking things up about it. And then you and I were talking last week about Talk Talk and Joe Meek, and we started talking about this song. And you have a bit of a history with it, right?
Yes, I wrote it.
I didn't know that. It's amazing the things we discover.
I think it's one of those sort of, it's one of the kind of the great sort of pop songs of the 1960s, and one of the great sort of, you know, psychedelic pop songs of the 1960s. Came out in 1967. As far as I know, it wasn't a hit in the States, so this is a one-hit wandering British special.
Correct. Is that right? That's exactly what it is. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I've read that it was number eight, got to number eight here. I've also read it got to number nine here. So let's just safely say it was a top 10 hit.
We'll say eight and a half.
Eight and a half. Yeah, exactly. Sorry, half. And it wasn't Simon Dupree and the Big Sound's first single. It was actually their fourth single, but it was their first single that got any kind of traction, because when they first formed, they were a kind of white soul band, really, as British bands were in the wake of, say, you know, the Rolling Stones and the Pretty Things. So it was at their managers and record labels' behest that they kind of changed tack to follow the hip sounds of the day. And they found via a music publishers a song called Kites, which was written by two Americans, actually, who I've never heard of, Hal Hackady and Lee Pockris. Are they names that ring any bells?
They actually wrote a lot of hits. They did that song, Johnny Angel.
Yep.
So they had quite a few big hits under the belt, but I had never heard of them. So this seems like a little, from what I read of their history, this seems like a little bit of a departure. I don't know if that's because of what Simon Dupree and the Big Sound did with it, or if it was intended to be a psychedelic pop song.
So I was trying to find out what they wrote Kites for. Was it for a musical? Was it to just offer as a pop song? Because Hal Hackady was known, you know, as a screenwriter of B movies, basically capitalizing on the rock and roll craze, and you know, Pockris wrote the music for songs like Itsy Bitsy Teeny Weeny Yellow Polka Dot Bikini and Catch a Falling Star, as well as Johnny Angels. So Kites was a kind of real aberration amongst all that. So I don't know where it came from in terms of why the song got written. But anyway, it fell into the hands of Simon Dupree and the Big Sound. And it was this big hit. And it's just, I think it's really unusual because you've just got, you know, I mean, there's like an early use of Mellotron. There's a xylophone in there. I think there's, you know, timpani.
It's got that great spoken word bit in the middle. That's if you'd agree with this, but when I first heard it, it kind of reminded me a little bit of the Moody Blues, like Knights in White Satin era.
But it's got that sort of, you know, Mellotron drift behind it, so I guess that you would put it in that field. But I think I love Knights in White Satin.
I do too.
That's more in a kind of melancholic vein. This is Kites is like the kind of the happy, trippy version of that. Mm-hmm. So if you love Moody Blues, then Kites would be, you know, you would, it would just be like, you know, catnip.
Kite nip. Well done.
As happens with these kind of things, the band themselves really didn't like it because it wasn't them. It wasn't their image. They were, you know, like a sort of a serious soul band, or so they felt. And then once they had this big hit, they then had to reproduce it. And but they probably didn't have, I mean, they didn't have a song anywhere near as good as Kites. I mean, you know, there are some good songs in there, but nothing that has that kind of idiosyncratic feel. And in 1969, they split up. But instead of going back to writing any kind of soul music, because I'm sure the time had passed, you know, for that as well, the band was actually, the sort of core of the band were three brothers, the Shulman brothers, Derek, Ray, and Phil, and they ended up forming quite a well-known progressive rock band here by the name of Gentle Giant, who were never of the sort of the stature of ELP or Yes or Genesis, but so, you know, I mean, I think they did about 12 albums in the end.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like a bit of Gentle Giant.
They were a little pastoral, maybe, for my taste. I like my prog to be darker, more sort of gothic, more Van de Graaff generator, something.
Yeah.
But they were obviously, you know, really, really good.
Do you know that song Alucard?
No.
Yeah, it's Dracula backwards. You can't get any more gothic than that.
Is that actually by by The Giant.
Or yeah, that's by the Giant. It's really a good song. It's pretty heavy.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Christian from my band The Earlies turned me on to them, and that was the song that he used to bring me into the fold was Alucard. It's pretty good. Yeah, you couldn't really get much further away from the sound of Simon Dupree and the big sound than with a lot of that Gentle Giant stuff that he would go on to do. It sounds like they were probably pretty pissed off with their whole experience with Simon Dupree, and they were like, well, we're just going to just go a little crazy here and throw it all into the wind with Gentle Giant rather than going back and doing some nice, respectable white soul.
It's interesting, isn't it, how... You know, you could certainly say that Gentle Giant didn't have an iota of kind of soul music to them. So they just, having got really, you know, sick of the psychedelic side of things, came back as a not psychedelic, but certainly the sort of prog rock came out of the psychedelic element of music in the sense that, you know, the boundaries were broken and you could do anything you wanted as opposed to the sort of tightly, you know, contain sound of soul. So maybe everyone who makes music, you're just fickle and you're all just chasing the next trend. Is that true?
Discuss. Yes, I think that's exactly it. Fickle.
Fickle.
Well, that song has got enduring appeal. I mean, it's been covered a few times, which I think we're going to be discussing what I think is probably the best cover here very shortly.
So you don't want to talk about Ultraviolet's prog house version from 1990.
I do want that to be the big finale.
Yeah, that was apparently that's highly thought of in the prog house scene, of which I am not a member. I tried, but they chucked me out early on.
Yeah, they tore up your card, which can only be a good thing.
So the cover version that you do want to talk about is by 39 Lion Street. Lion Street was a street in Dundee in Scotland where a few reprobates lived in the 1970s, essentially Billy McKenzie of the Associates. And I'm not quite sure whether his Associates partner, Alan Rankin, lived there as well, but it was a sort of post-student household and they would hold parties and Billy McKenzie would sing that song, and because it was one of his big favourites. It's just a belter, and you know, it's got such a great melody. It was a great song, but I mean, it wasn't a hit single, because whether RSO didn't put anything behind it, or the fact that it came out under the name of 39 Lion Street, who nobody had ever heard of, And that was their only single, because they went back to just using their own name, and there was talk of them doing another single under that, under 39 Lime Street, but that single, 18 Carat Love Affair, actually came out under Associates. So it was just, again, a one-off, not even a one-hit, but if you know and love the 1967 version, then you absolutely have to get to hear the 1981 version.
When I first heard this song, I went in chronological order. I was introduced to it through the Simon Dupree and the Big Sound, and I really liked it. But then when I listened to the 39 Lime Street, it kind of just clicked. And I mean, it's so different, yet it takes the spirit of the original, and I think it kind of fulfills what that song should be doing. I also think it's a really good example of a lot of the other sort of music that was kind of that time. It's got that post-punk feel. Reminds me a little bit of the Flying Lizards and other bands that were starting to kind of experiment with dub and electronics and the whole new wave aesthetic. It's a really good balance of all those things.
Billy did another version of it in 1984 as the B-side of the single Breakfast, and that was after he and Alan Rankin had parted ways and Billy had kept the name of the band. And I think this was his second solo single, and he did a version of Kites, but it really isn't as good. It's got a very kind of tinny drum track, and it's the opposite. It's kind of less than what, you know, the Simon Dupree version has. The fact it's Billy singing it is great, but it doesn't have that sort of carefree, experimental feel to it. I mean, it's worth hearing just to hear how he treated it, but it's, you know, it's like a real letdown after the 39 Lime Street one.
Yeah, well, they were never going to top that one, were they? I think it's pretty much perfect as it is.
Yeah.
Found in my exploration of this song, there was an Israeli band who covered it called Nikmat Hatractor, which is exactly how it's supposed to be pronounced, by the way.
So that's only three known versions of Kites. I mean, there's a couple of YouTube versions of someone playing it on a ukulele and someone playing it on piano, but I don't think they have any vocals, and I certainly wasn't going to stick around to find out.
No. Well, there's the fourth one that you unearthed earlier, that the Progressive House
Ultraviolet
version, which it was kind of painful to listen to be honest. I think we're scraping the bottom of the barrel here.
I think that the kite has landed now.
The kite has landed, and it's in bad shape. So we can say, if you like The Associates, you will like 39 Lion Street. If you like Moody Blues, you will like Simon Dupree and the Big Sound. But if you like Simon Dupree and the Big Sound, doesn't necessarily mean you're going to like Gentle Giant and vice versa.
No, and if you like Gentle Giant, doesn't mean you'll like Associates.
If you like The Associates, you're not going to necessarily like Nick Matt Hot Tractor or Ultraviolet, especially.
And you may not like kites. You know, you might have a phobia about pieces of paper at the end of pieces of string.
That's true. I think we're gonna have to make a diagram of all this to make sure people stay clear on it. Well, thanks again for talking to me.
You're welcome. It's been nice talking.
Yeah, and let's talk again soon.
Okay. Alrighty.
Alright, talk to you soon. Well, that wraps it up for this mini episode of One Hit Wondering. If you have any suggestions for songs or albums we should discuss, or comments for the show, you can write to us at onehitwondering@gmail.com. That's the number one, hitwondering@gmail.com. You can also follow us at Twitter @onehitwondering. Again, that's the number one, hitwondering. Also, be sure to check out another really good music podcast on the Dream Spectrum Media Podcast Network. It's hosted by my good friend Dave Grant, and it's called the Craft Music Discovery Podcast. It focuses on new and emerging indie singer-songwriters, and it's a really good show. And that's it for this episode of One Hit Wondering. We'll be back soon with another installment. Thanks for listening.
This has been a production of the Dream Spectrum Media Podcast Network.